Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And we are celebrating a Victory Monday here on the Team 980. A playoff edition of a Victory Monday, Anthony Haney.
Yes, sir, man. Hey, look, I'm still hurting from yesterday, Kurt. I'm still recovering.
Still recovering. Yeah, I was... had Lorenzo Alexander on the Instant Reaction Show last night. We were rolling till almost midnight. They're live on YouTube, and hopefully some of y'all woke up this morning. Although, like, I was so wired, like, doing that show. We had great energy. Zoe was fantastic filling in for Logan. And, like, just everything about it. You're wired up from the game, from the show. And my poor wife had to be up early this morning. And so she was already in bed, and I just kind of crawled in, and I'm sitting there, and I feel like I was just like, because like I had to be quiet, and I didn't want to, like, you know, I knew that she would be waiting for me to get into bed. I mean, obviously, because I was doing the show, the Instant Reaction Show from my home studio, she could hear everything I said. So once I finally shut up and, got to doing a little bit of the behind the scenes work that I had to do for it, to make sure it was in everybody's podcast feed this morning, she passed out. But I knew she'd be waiting on me. I didn't want to just, like, I mean, I did want to go back and just rewatch the game. I did want to, like, I don't know, go do a meditation and see if I could calm down. So I just laid in the bed and stared at the ceiling like, oh my God, they won. Oh my God, they won. Oh my God, they won. And it's because they won. Yeah. Love that. Happy Victory Monday to all. Anthony, do we owe the Victory Monday to a good luck halftime glizzy?
Yes, we do, Craig. I promise you. I took a full pack. I went to Giant, took a full pack of glizzies to my friend's house, cooked it on his stove, proceeded to
eat bro,
the glizzy.
Hey, bro, I got to borrow your stove real quick.
Yes, I needed a pot, I needed a plate, I needed a knife, because they didn't have any bread. So I had to eat the glizzy. No ketchup, no nothing, just a hot dog, man. But I needed it. It was essential.
You do what you got to do to win the football game, which actually brings us quite nicely to the way we start each and every show after Commanders game, victory or not. I don't know. They haven't lost in a while. Six straight. It's time for First and 10.
It's time to get the breakdown started. One, two, three, straight. First up, 10 observations.
Stuck it and just boom, put it right on the ground.
It's First and 10.
Oh, buddy.
Number one.
Of course they won that way. Of course it was dramatic. Of course it was almost a little bit silly. Doink! Couldn't have just been a regular field goal. Nope. Had to be the kicker fixing his buzz cut haircut 78 times and then doinking it off the upright. It had to be that way. It also had to be with Jaden Daniels snatching the soul of the opposing defense as if to say, you're so close, but I'm so sorry. You're not as good at this as I am. As if the whole point was to prove just that. That when it's time, in the winning time moments, we've got me and you don't. All you've got, Kalijah Kancey, is my towel. That is a scene, the Kalijah Kancey third down chasing Jaden Daniels, grabbing his towel as if it's flag football, realizing all he got was the towel. And then getting up as Daniels dives forward for the first down, which allowed them to run the clock all the way down to 3 seconds and thus kick the game-winning field goal with no time remaining. I will remember that scene from Kalijah Kancey for as long as I live. And him with towel in one hand, open hand in the other, putting both on his helmet. Like, I cannot believe that just happened to me. Kalijah, the good news is you had a great game. The good news is you got plenty of company on the wrong end of Jaden Daniels' highlights. The bad news is you're on the wrong end of a Jaden Daniels highlight in a game that was a playoff game that you lost in the most Commanders way possible.
Number two.
Their way of winning a football game also meant the heartbeats of their team had to show up. And boy, did they. Terry McLaurin, involved from the jump. The first third down of the game is the 35-yarder where he just does the thing that he does. He tracks the ball over his shoulder, catches it through contact while diving. He does that better than everybody else in the sport. 35 yards on Jamel Dean. Frankie Louvu had to show up, and he certainly did not have some monster Frankie Louvu game with three sacks and batting balls and a pick or anything. There's a couple of key plays along the way, chasing down Baker Mayfield on the sideline, tackling him in a way that I thought at first was definitely a horse collar. Then you see the replay, and you're like, nope, got him clean. That's a legal play. So plays like that, a couple of run stuffs that Louvu had. And then Bobby Wagner, who had what is the obvious most important play of the day, where he recovers that fumble. He's Johnny on the spot because, of course, he is. He always knows what's going on. He's right there to take advantage of a huge miscommunication between Baker Mayfield, Graham Barton, and Jalen McMillan. But also, he sets up another miscommunication crushing Tampa. It's second and inches, and Baker tries to keep it down on what turned into Tampa's final drive. Stuff. Stone cold stops Baker, sets up a third down. They have the miscommunication on the snap count, which I believe is on, like, I don't know. I've never heard a turbo set hut be anything other than on one. And so I wonder whether that was on Graham Barton and they were trying to do that to draw the Commanders off sides, or was that a mess up by Baker that when you say turbo, that means snap the ball on set hut. And whatever it is, their snap count got messed up. It winds up being a loss of multiple yards. Tampa then is like, oh, we can't go for it. Let's just tie the game with a field goal. That was with 4:41 remaining. They never saw the ball again.
Number three.
But of course, the most important piece is Jaden Daniels. In NFL history, there have been three instances of a team having zero turnovers and zero punts in a game behind a starting quarterback that was a rookie, regular or postseason. Zero turnovers, zero punts. All three were by the Commanders this season with that guy. Week two, week three, and the playoff game last night. Washington, behind Daniels, converted three fourth down attempts, the most in a playoff game in franchise history since at least 2000. Daniels joins Peyton Manning as the second quarterback in NFL history, not rookie, second quarterback period in NFL history to lead a team to zero turnovers and zero punts in a road playoff game. Daniel's ability to not turn over the football is something that we knew coming out of LSU was pretty special. They've played 18 games at this point. They're 13-5 overall. In 18 games, according to Pro Football Focus, he has had 12 turnover-worthy plays. That is it. 12. As a guy who handles the ball, every snap for 18 games, and he played all but, what, three halves of those 18 games? Second half against Dallas, and he basically missed the entire Carolina game after being hurt on the first series? Like, that is incredible for a rookie. I mean, Peyton Manning loves to joke all the time about how he set the rookie interception record. There have been plenty of good, efficient even, rookie seasons. 12 turnover-worthy plays all season from a quarterback is sensational. To do it as a rookie is unheard of. And now he joins Peyton Manning as the second quarterback ever in the history of the league to lead a team to zero turnovers, zero punts in a road playoff game. He does it while being not just efficient, but proficient. He joins Russell Wilson as the second rookie quarterback in NFL history with over 250 passing yards, two or more passing touchdowns, and 35 or more rushing yards in a playoff game. He was the Commanders' leading rusher, not only in yardage, but in attempts with his 13. He carried them yesterday. And perhaps the most encouraging thing of all of this is not just how good he is right now, but the growth. Coming out of school, it's like, oh, can he attack the middle of the field? Or is he just a fade ball thrower who's then, if it's the fade's not there, it's either a comeback or he runs it. Nope. Last night, over the middle of the field, between the hashes, or sorry, between the numbers, from 10 to 20 yards out, so that intermediate range where a lot of big boy quarterbacking happens because you have to make tight window throws through traffic. You have to layer balls over defenders. You have to bend your arm angle around guys. You have to throw with tremendous anticipation. He was 6 for 6 with 2 touchdowns. Yeah, he did everything. Simply put, this season, Jaden Daniels has been historic. This is who he is. He's one win away from an almost indisputable place as the best rookie quarterback in the history of the National Football League. Certainly the modern NFL, but I think with what he's done, you make the argument for the whole 100-plus year history of the kit and caboodle. He might already be that, no matter what happens Saturday night in Detroit. But this is history that we are witnessing, and no matter what happens from here on forward, his place is cemented as the best first-year quarterback that, I mean, certainly I've ever seen. I think that any of us have ever seen. And not just is it prolific in terms of production, it is directly leading to wins with everything on his shoulders constantly. We'll talk about more of just why it's been on his shoulders so much, some of the struggles in the run game, some of the supporting pieces that he has lifted up next as we continue with our 1st and 10 on the Hoffman Show on a Victory Monday on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980. We're taking your calls starting in 12 minutes at 4:30 on a Tell the Truth Monday. It's also a Victory Monday as the Commanders defeat the Bucks as time expires. Doink, Commanders win. Let's continue with our 1st and 10.
I took a full pack. I went to Giants.
Anthony, we got some sound bleeding through, sir. If we could a replay of the first segment. I mean, we do want to regale. Yeah, now we're good. Regaling in the tale of your glizzies is fun. But if people want to hear that, they can go to the Hoffman Show podcast and get that or rewind on the Odyssey app. We're just going to roll without that for right now. Thank you kindly. All right, picking up with our 1st and 10.
Number 4.
Diami Brown's emergence might be my personal favorite story of the season. His first 3 years combined, Brown had 26 catches for 476 yards, 3 touchdowns. He also only carried the football 3 times for 11 yards. This season, 30 catches, 308 yards, a touchdown, 3 carries, 26 yards as well. Last night, 8 receptions, 89 yards, and a touchdown. So he had more catches this year, almost 80% of his yardage production, and he did just have the 1 touchdown. But if you take out that 1 random Tennessee game, he equaled his touchdown production from the first 3 years. He also carried the ball as many times this year as he did in the first 3 years, which I think if you watch him run with the football, you realize good job coaching staff this year. And it's really emblematic of a larger point that they have found ways to maximize what feels like every player on this roster, but certainly some of the more talented ones that have a chance to contribute as long as you put them into positions that they're actually good at and keep them out of the ones they're not very good at. And perhaps nobody exhibits that more than Diami Brown. Congrats to him. Picked a heck of a day to have a career day.
Number 5.
I have been saying, in fact, often in this segment, that I would love Dan Quinn to have a little more Dan Campbell to him when it came to fourth downs. And the last month of the season, during this win streak, he has. So, Tressway, I hope you have a seat on the plane to Detroit, but I don't know that either punter is going to be called upon on Sunday when these two Dans face off. It has been a necessary thing for Washington because defensively, like, you want to be able to keep that defense off the field. There's been some struggles here and there. And if you can just keep the play volume low, then some of the penalties and things that they tend to pick up on longer extended drives are less likely to happen. But also it's been something that maximizes your chances at winning because you're just so good at it on fourth down. They are not only the best team on fourth downs this year, they're the best team on fourth down in 25 years. Why wouldn't you use that? And sure, percentage-wise, are you probably going to drop down if you're not quite as selective as when you go for it? Sure. But if you go from the best in 25 years to the best in 10 years, or certainly the best this year, clearly that seems like it would be worth it to continue to take those attempts. And sure, oh, they left 6 points on the board. Did they? Or did they gain 8? Because you don't get the 2 touchdowns if you don't get, if you don't go for it every time. So I think they're +8 on the fourth down. Yeah, sure. You could have dropped 6, or you dropped 6, but you gained 14. That the gaining of the 14 seems worth it. And this is how they're going to have to play for the rest of the season. I hope this is how they play for the rest of Jaden Daniels' career, frankly. Continuing on.
Number 6.
Fourth down will be easier if the running game doesn't continue to be a gigantic problem. Brian Robinson in this game. 10 carries, 16 yards. They averaged 2.5 yards per carry as a team. That's obviously not good, but you can't say it's not good enough because, well, they won the football game. And at the end of the day, winning is the point. And I got to, you know, as those statistics are all true and good and, or I should say true and bad, I got to give Cliff a lot of credit because he never abandoned the run. He wasn't afraid to run it, but he also tried to do it on early downs in situations where, hey, okay, this gets stopped. We have the ability to make up for it. And so you got a good gain on first down. Let's run it on second and short and see if we can steal the first down. Oh, no, we didn't. Okay, that's fine. It's 3rd and 3. We're still in a good situation. Okay, we're going to run it on first down. Okay, that didn't work. Now we throw it on second down. Well, now we're in 3rd and 3 again. So they avoided a lot of 3rd and longs despite the fact that they ran the football horrendously ineffectively and inefficiently. And that is a tribute to Cliff because then, you know, the Bucs defense is still sitting on the run. They still don't want to all of a sudden make those numbers flip. They don't want to just give up a ton of yardage on the ground. So they found a way for Tampa to have to respect the run while also not killing themselves by being so heinously bad at it. That is a fine line to walk, and Cliff deserves a ton of credit for that. Now, they need to figure out what they can do to not be heinously bad at it, but that is a problem for Detroit and next week.
Number 7.
Marshawn Lattimore. I don't have to tell you it wasn't good. He looked rusty and he looked very frustrated. And I know he's highly competitive and I love the finish on some of these plays where he gives up the catches and he's still slamming Evans down out of bounds. There's a nastiness. There's a bleep you attitude. There's a lot of good stuff that you want out of your football players, especially your tone setters. And Marshawn Lattimore is one of those guys, but I'd also like him to play better. And he would, I'm sure, like to play better. They would like him to play better. This is not a selfish radio host or a bunch of fans being like, about a guy that actually secretly is playing fine. No, Marshawn Lattimore, the last couple of games, I mean, the AJ Brown one was a lot more mixed results. There's some really nice plays in that game that Lattimore made on Brown against Philly, but committed a bunch of penalties and gave up some yards. There's not a lot of redeeming qualities on this performance last night against Mike Evans. He just lost a lot to a great receiver whose number he's had for the majority of their careers, but he looked rusty, didn't look like he trusted his feet, didn't look like he trusted, you know, what he was seeing. And Evans lit him up. And good on the Commanders for changing some things up later in the game, for maybe putting the double team over there, for letting Sanders still cover him a little bit to make sure that it didn't become a sideshow any more than it already was. But I also think this is probably something that's temporary for Lattimore as he knocks the rust off. And I mean, he's got a massive challenge this week, either Amon-Ra St. Brown or Jameson Williams, basically every snap. So huge, huge challenge for the Commander secondary, and hopefully Marshawn Lattimore is feeling a lot better in week 2 back than he was in week 1.
Number 8.
Overall, the time of possession dominance was necessary because of how bad the Commander's pass defense was. Baker Mayfield was the number 1 quarterback this weekend, pending Sam Darnold or Matthew Stafford going crazy tonight. But the number 1 quarterback this weekend, an EPA per dropback, was Baker Mayfield. So that means every time he dropped back, it was worth more points on the scoreboard in estimation than any other quarterback who dropped back this weekend. That's saying something considering all the quarterbacks who did all the things when they dropped back this weekend. However, part of that number being so high per drop back is he's only dropping back, I think, about 20 times. He had 19 attempts. He had the one big scramble that killed them. Had a couple of sacks, so low 20s. That's really, really impressive. It means you're doing a lot of things right in the run game, and it means you're doing a lot of stuff right on offense to keep the ball out of the opposing offense's hands. And just how rare is what Washington did yesterday? Washington, the eighth team since at least 2000 to have five 10-plus play drives in a playoff game. Five drives over 10 plays. They ate clock, and that helped them be incredibly efficient on defense on a day where they actually, I should say, effective on defense on a day where they were very much not efficient.
Number 9.
The other thing the time of possession dominance did was slow Tampa's pass rush. Early in this game, Jaden Daniels felt like he was under immense pressure often. Even on the, you know, some of the big plays, the throw to Terry, he gets hit pretty good. There's pressure that he has to roll away from, and it kind of almost looked like the first game, the first couple of drives where he's scrambling everywhere. But as the game went, he was able to settle into the pocket a lot more, in part because Tampa's pass rushers were just flat out tired. They registered 15 pressures on 40 dropbacks, but it didn't feel that way. So sometimes you get a pressure, I mean, even on the touchdown, where he gets hit low to De'Ami Brown. That's technically a pressure, but like he didn't feel any real pressure on that. That's because the guy got there late. Impactful pressures, probably less than 10 in the game. And for a team that blitzes as much as Tampa does, I think they wound up blitzing, I think the final number was 55% of dropbacks in this game. That's pretty, pretty darn good. Last but not least,
number 10.
I'll do it in wins. I'll do it in losses. I'll do it till it gets better. Can we have one game where the refs don't do something egregiously stupid? The lack of a PI call on Zach Ertz on that fourth down where Lavonte David, who was fantastic, tackled him is insane. How do you watch that happen and not call a flag? How do you not get together in a midi huddle and then have the instant replay from New York do something they're not supposed to? And be like, hey, guys, you really messed that up. And then talk about it and be like, actually, sorry, there was a PI. There was a hold, illegal contact. Whichever one you want to call, but the ball was in the air when it was happening, so it should have been PI. I don't get it. I don't know what they're looking at. Every single game in these big games, there are calls that are just mind-blowingly bad. That was the one for yesterday. Thank God that karma had the Commanders back, because just a couple of plays later, you have the fumble. Bobby gets it. Commanders ultimately score, and probably for clock purposes, in a way that worked out for them. So worked out in the end. But man, officials, please just call the ones that you're supposed to call and don't call the ones that you're not supposed to. There was a couple of soft ones earlier on in the game as well. That's first and 10, everybody. 10 observations from me in the first half hour of the show. So now we turn the thing over to you. Your calls, 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980 to tell the truth Monday. How are you feeling after this Commanders playoff victory? What truths do you have after their first playoff win since the 2005 season? We take your calls next on The Hoffman Show.
It's Tell the Truth Monday on The Hoffman Show.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Call us now at 301-230-0980 to tell the truth about the Commanders.
You can't handle the truth!
Or hit the comment section at the Team 980 on YouTube.
Tell the Truth Monday here on the Team 980. And we're going to get right to the phones at 301-230-0980. I feel like there's a lot of happy truths to come as the Commanders have won their first playoff game since 2006, the 2005 season, of course. Next up, Detroit on Saturday. Let's get right to it. Let's go to Mill. Mill, get us started here on a victory. Tell the Truth Monday.
What's up, Craig? Thank you so much for taking my call. Thank you, Anthony, always playing that song.
sorry, I'm a little bit under the weather, but man, I mean, that was an epic game. I think the last time I called, I was telling people, like, literally, I mean, y'all got to hang in there, know that the Commanders, this is something new. This is a new era. JD5 is here to stay. And I just got a couple of things. Like, I just think, you know, even if we would have went into overtime, so say if the kicker would have missed, I still think JD still would have went and took the game over himself. Or let alone we would still win in overtime and made adjustments. Because Cliff Kingsbury, I mean, it wasn't the best play calling all game, but, I mean, you could just tell how these guys never give up. They're very resilient. And, I mean, shout out to some of those plays that Cliff came up with the Marcus Mariota being on the field, getting that first down, you know. Deron Payne, you know, he made that sack before going out of play, out of the game with the injury, but it was just amazing how they just, like I said, resilient, day to day, just so poised, you know, getting that third and one, that first down for the kicker to sink the field goal. And I'm just happy. I'm on cloud nine. And to be honest, hail to the Commanders, and we're going into the Lions Den next week, man.
it's going to be a lot of fun, Mill. Thanks for the call. And I'm really glad you brought up the stuff with Cliff, because I can't wait to dive into this tape. I'm only one series in so far on the tape, and obviously that ends in a fourth down that doesn't go the Commander's way. And, like, I actually really like the play call on fourth down. They tried a middle screen to Austin Ekeler, and the Bucs did a really good job of sitting on it. They also got pressure quickly, and there's really not a whole lot of play calls that work with a ton of pressure. And even, like, the goal line sequence that they wind up, that's the other fourth down they fail on, the one where it should have been PI on Ertz. So maybe they should have ultimately succeeded. But, like, on the first down where they have the rollout to Bates, like, Jaden just got to throw it. That's a good play call. It's a good design. It's good execution by Bates, except for Jaden doesn't throw the football for some bizarre reason. He's not perfect. Even in a game where he was great and was the absolute engine why they won, like, there's an example of something to grow on, something to do better. And he's been so good in the red zone. It's hard as a play caller if you're, hey, just ram the ball in there. Well, that wasn't working ever. They tried to run the ball in there. They tried quarterback run. And so it just leaves you with a ton of limited options. And eventually Cliff's still able to get them in the end zone when it matters the most. So I can't wait to get deeper into some of the situational play calling, but just, I think there's great stuff all around from a whole lot of people yesterday. Let's go to Mike in DC. Mike, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show on a Tell the Truth Victory Monday.
Well, you know what? Thank you for having me. Being a longtime Washington fan, going back to actually my first game, kind of speaking on this whole luck piece, because there's been a lot of luck around here this season. My first game ever was the NFC East title game in 1979, when I think we had the Cowboys, 30-23. And then Roger Staubach comes down the field and does the stuff that he did. And we ended up losing that game 31-30. That was my first game. Now, being on the other end, you know, having lived through all the winning years, you know, I hear a lot of these younger fans call in and they're talking about how miserable they've been over the past, you know, 30 years. And absolutely true. But coming from a winning perspective, I'm a Reagan baby. So I saw those glory years, you know, and then to have to live through 30 years of obscurity has just been, I mean, it's just mind blowing how the ball's bouncing our way these days. You know, to tell the truth, I'm very comfortable with playing Detroit. I was actually hoping that we would get an opportunity to play them because all the pressure's on them. However, I'm a little concerned, if I got to tell the truth, I'm concerned about our run game. You know, when we're running these RPOs, I don't know why we're, you know, or we're just kind of just going for this halfback dive, and there aren't any holes there at all. I mean, zero holes. So I'm just wondering how we can counter that, you know, this Saturday.
Yeah, it's a great question, Mike, and it's one that I'm looking forward to diving in with Logan on the tape. I appreciate the call, and congrats to you, man, sticking with it and getting to see all this winning. But I think on the run game stuff, like, it all looks the same often on TV from the sideline angle. These, you know, it looks like a halfback dive. Some of them are truly you know, halfback dive, where it's just a man-to-man blocking scheme running forward, or really it's inside zone where it winds up looking pretty similar on most snaps, right? Or it's just like, hey, let's get forward and let's get some movement. Sometimes it's a duo play where there are specific double teams, and those have gone okay at times this year. Sometimes there are traps and whams and pullers and GTs and counters, and it's all inside runs, and some of the times it's even an outside run that doesn't get to the outside because ultimately the reason they're all failing is pretty similar. The offensive line is just not hitting blocks and moving people in a way that they were earlier in the season. And so it comes down to getting these seals and creases for guys to squirm through. And I don't know that B-Rob's really hitting those right now. Eckler's done a good job on some situations. I think Chris Rodriguez has probably been their best runner the last couple of the last month, but it's in very limited carries. They clearly don't trust him with as much of the playbook, or they just don't think Robinson's been bad enough to bench. They think it's other stuff. And thus, when Austin came back, Chris was inactive yesterday. So I think the counter to that is, can you change the numbers? And they did a good job of that at times yesterday with the RPO game. Jaden pulls two of them and hits Terry on a slant twice. One of them is called back because he pulls it really late, and Wiley actually got good movement for once and got to the second level and was up the field. The problem was Jaden then threw the football, and it was an ineligible man downfield penalty. That's a tough one on Wiley. The other option is the way they've been successful over the last month before yesterday was Jaden pulls it and he runs, and Marcus pulls it and he runs. And if you're going to overload the front side of these zone read plays, then that means there's numbers on the back side. Tampa played everything really well yesterday. And what you have to hope is Detroit doesn't quite have the discipline, doesn't have a player like Kalijah Kancey, who's so quick and can, from that three technique position, you know, it was weird. It was interesting. It's something I'm going to talk about with Logan. Often you read the edge player. They were leaving Kancey unblocked yesterday as an interior guy, and I'm curious what that was all about and that wrinkle, why they thought that would be the right move. And obviously it backfired at times because Kancey's so quick and he was able to play both the halfback and the quarterback. So there's a lot of detail that gets to the run game that gets really nerdy. I'll have some more better answers for you later in the week. We'll have a really thorough breakdown on Take Command with Logan, who knows the run game as well as any analyst that I've ever worked with. But those are some initial thoughts on kind of what happened with that run game, what they can do moving forward. And I think the beauty of it is they somehow, despite that, played a ball control offense, found the screen game, found the quick game, found the hitches, found the slants to replace the run game, and were able to control the ball at a really, really high rate, holding it for over 35 minutes, never punting. And that's how they were able to play complementary football without a running game. Not ideal, but better than not playing complementary football at all. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. When we get back, more of your calls on a Tell the Truth Monday. It's a Tell the Truth Monday, a Victory Monday on the Hoffman Show. Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. And let's get back to the phones, get right to it with Alan in D.C. Alan, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show.
Hey, Craig, how are you? I am actually talking to you from the Montgomery County dump inside here right now, and that's why it might be a little loud. We're not supposed to be on the phone, but I'm going to stay on anyway and just tell you what I think real quick. I think this guy has got, Jaden Daniels has got some kind of a God connection going on, and I would actually label it Daniels in the lion's den, because this guy's coming out of pressure-packed situations, cool and calm as can be, and three instances real quick, and then I'd just be interested in your take. When he walks on the field, he kneels down, says a prayer by himself. When he comes off the sideline, he makes the Christian, you know, cross mark on his chest, and he points up to the sky, and he looks upward, and then he goes and takes his first snap. And when you interview him after the game, as they did yesterday, they asked him how he stayed so calm under pressure, and he said, hey, I just put it all in God's hands and let him deal with it. Now, I don't know, you know, I don't know what the comments are about that, but there's a factor here in the way he plays that can't be denied, in my opinion. And I think it's a great thing, and I think it's a great lesson for all of us. I'd just be curious what you've seen in all of your experience. Does this kind of thing stand out to you? Do you think it's a factor, et cetera?
No, I think it's a really interesting question. And no, we're going to touch the third rail of religion here, and that's going to get me in trouble with someone, Alan. But, you know, your call, you might be coming from the dump, but the call is not trash. I'm going to let you do the hang up and listen bit, especially because you're not supposed to be on the phone. But hopefully the Odyssey app or the radio is working for you, and you can listen there. But I do think there's something to this. And, you know, I'm gonna attack this from a psychological angle, not purely a religious angle. But I have interviewed and talked to many athletes who have very strong faiths along my journey of covering sports. And whether they think that it is coming from a higher power or it's religious intervention or whatever, there is something to the psychological peace, I guess is the word I would use, that it's not in my hands. And again, you can debate till you're blue in the face. You can have an actual religious or theological argument on the truth or the source of all of that. But purely from a human psychology element, it is incredibly powerful to say, like, I'm going to go do my best and it's in some other power's hands to decide the result. And in fact, it might already be preordained. And again, you cannot believe it, but if he believes it, then as fans, we get to reap the results of that. And I do think the calmness under pressure, I think of some of the other people that I know in sports that are very calm under pressure. I think of my friend Ashley Hatch, who is one of the premier goal scorers in the NWSL and one of the best penalty takers in the history of that league. She's sixth all time in goals, period. And she is consistently, just time after time, banged home penalty after penalty after penalty. And she's a very like faith-forward person. And she has a way of, right when she's at the penalty spot, just taking a big deep breath and centering herself. And I have no doubt that for her, like, her faith plays a role in that. There's plenty of other athletes that are like that, that for them, and again, it's not about whether you believe it, it's the psychological impact of whether they believe it. And there's something to that with Jaden. I saw a quote from Terry last night after the game that Terry, who's a man of faith as well, is connected with Jaden over that. So it's a way for teammates to bond that might not have as much in common, or maybe they do, but it's a common ground. And so there's a lot to that. And again, the validity of any higher power or religion, or, you know, it's not about theology or theocracy and getting into a whole debate on that front, but merely from a human performance and a psychological standpoint, there's absolutely something to that. And that I have absolutely no problem saying here on the radio, where we don't really talk a whole lot about religion. Let's keep it rolling with Tim in D.C. Tim, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show on a Tell the Truth Monday.
Craig, appreciate taking my call, man. That was a serious point you just made, bro. You stay with the psychological points, man. Keep it up. Hey, I feel like, I ain't going to say untouchable, but I feel like, again, give me a shot at the end of the game with five, and no doubt I think we're going to win. If we don't, okay, we took our shot, but this more than anything, like our coaches, man, it's like our coaches is putting everybody in such a position to where I don't even worry about this no more as a fan. I just know I can be blinded sometimes as a fan and say, hey, if you give us the ball, 2 minutes left, we going to win because I know the coach is going to keep it close for us because I don't have to worry about that no more because we got Magic Johnson dancing in at the stadium. We got, you know what I'm saying? We got stuff like that going on now. And if you ain't in the city, you got to understand the city different right now, bro. And I'm going to do an age check for everybody. I'm sorry. My last time we won a playoff game, I was 16 years old. My first game I ever went to was at RFK. The stadium was shaking. Gus Frerotte was our quarterback running in the walls and stuff like that. The city different, man. Hey, Craig, keep up the good work, man. Happy, man. Keep it up, bro. Only Detroit, man. Why not us?
Yes, indeed. Appreciate you, Tim. And, you know, to be honest, like, it's all – like, the last two calls are related, right? And, like, again, whether it's – a belief in a higher power, whether the higher power that you believe in is your teammate, Jaden Daniels, like whatever it is that is keeping this group calm. And there's a clarity to it as well, right? They have clear minds in the biggest moments. They don't stress. And for all of them, it probably comes from a different place. For Jaden, absolutely his faith plays a role. I think for someone like Cliff, I don't know if he's a big prayer guy or whatever, but I know that dude has put in a ton of work, that he has clarity because his clarity comes from his preparation. Dan Quinn, he's thought about all these situations and has repped them in meetings where it's like, okay, it's this time. Okay, our communication is this. I'm going to do this. Cliff, we want this. I'm going to call time out here. Like, it's preparation. It's prayer. It's belief in your teammates, in the group as a call. Whatever it is, they've got it. They've figured out their formula for this year and hopefully for many years to come. And the results, well, they speak for themselves. They have won a 13th game this season. Their first playoff win since 2005 or 2006, the 2005 season. On down the list and just time and time again executing in late game situations. They're now 9-4 in close games this year, which seems like a relevant point. Yeah, it's pretty damn good. Let's wrap it up with one more. Let's go to Shaq and Lanham. Shaq, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show. Wrap us up here on a Tell the Truth Monday.
Hey, Craig. Jaden, he plays the game to win. He plays the game with confidence. He plays the way. He hates to lose. He's not real flamboyant about it with his emotions. But you can tell by the way he plays to win. And that confidence just carries over to other teams. You know, now we know what Kansas City, Green Bay, the Colts with Manning, and when New England had Brady, the confidence their team when they should get the ball back. For one season so far, now we know what they've been feeling like for years. But Jaden just has that confidence and carries over to the rest of the team. And you know, it just can't even describe it, man. It's great.
It's hard to describe, and I appreciate the call, man, and totally agree that there's just something. Like last night as that game is winding down, and Tampa's driving, you're just not that stressed. Anthony's had his halftime good luck glizzy. Jaden's going to get the ball back. Whether he's down or he's got to have a field or he's tied, field goal, touchdown, they would have done it. They didn't punt the entire game. Like, that was the thing. As the defense crumbled, Anthony, I was just like, yeah, but Tampa literally has not stopped them the entire game. They did not punt in a playoff game. Zero turnovers in a playoff game. On the road. Doesn't happen. Except for them. Because they did it. And whether they're hashtag blessed or just really good in key situations, whatever deity it is that you believe in, they're going to Detroit. I'm pretty pumped about it. We're going to talk about it all week long here on the Hoffman Show. Michael Phillips was there in Tampa. We check in with him. Then we are actually only on until 6 p.m. tonight. What a terrible day to have to give away an hour of our show. But we got play-by-play tonight here on the station. That'll be all right. We'll get after it again tomorrow. A chance for me to go watch an extra hour of film tonight. So I promise to bring it for you all tomorrow. But because of that, our pick six at 6 is going to be at 5:30 today. We'll review some of the biggest players in this game. Michael Phillips next, though, on the Team 980. Hour number 2 is the final hour today of the Hoffman Show. We got hoops coming up, pregame starting at 6 o'clock. I believe it's Georgetown hoops tonight. Wizards will be over on 106.7. Maryland tonight. Wizards over on the 106.7, the Fan, Anthony? Or are they on 1580 tonight? They're on 1580 tonight. Okay. So got your basketball all straightened out. We're talking football until 6 o'clock. That's all you need to know right now. And you need to know that Michael Phillips is going to join us because it's 5 o'clock on a Monday. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's still football season.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
Michael Phillips was there down on the big old pirate ship in Tampa where he saw a Commanders victory. Michael, happy Victory Monday to you, sir.
I'm just so excited. I do have to issue a very minor correction, not to bring down the mood. Oh. They didn't let me on the pirate ship.
Well, I mean, I meant the big proverbial pirate ship. I did ask last week on Tuesday, because Mitch Tischler joins us, I was like, if they win, will you and JP do your post-game show on the pirate ship? And I was told by Mitchell, We tried in week one. They wouldn't let us, to which I replied, I believe every bit of that.
We went over pregame, me and one of the reporters who had never been to the pirate ship before. Now, I will say, like 8 years ago, I went on the pirate ship. I've been on the pirate ship. I guess things have changed. There were two staircases on the pirate ship, one in the front, one in the back. Went to the one in the front. Hey, can we go up on the pirate ship? And the security guy said, no, we're having a private party up there. You can't. So I chatted with him for a minute. We went on our way. We walk around. We walk to the back. There's another staircase. I said, hey, doesn't hurt to try twice. Walk up to the guy. Hey, we're from Washington. We're down here. We'd love to see the pirate ship. Can we go up and, you know, take a picture on the pirate ship? And he goes, yeah, absolutely. Okay. He goes, the only thing is, this is the exit. So what you need to do is you just need to walk around to the other side of the ship. There will be a staircase there, and I'm sure that guy will let you up, and you can go see the pirate ship.
Oh, that's a funny story. That's well delivered. That's a good stand-up comic bit right there, Michael Phillips. But you want to know where that staircase led on that pirate ship?
It was a staircase to heaven yesterday.
Well, for the Bucks fans, it was a staircase to Loserville because the Commanders went down there.
Loserville.
And one, real quick, just on seed setting beyond your ventures to try to get on the pirate ship. It sounded on television like there were a ton of Commanders fans down there. Was that something you felt in the stadium, or were they just well placed near microphones?
They were, so, you know, two levels to the stadium, upper deck and lower deck. The lower deck behind the bench was all Commanders fans. They had that section. They didn't have any of the other sections. So if I'm doing percentages, I want to be fair, it's probably 80-20. They were not, it wasn't close to 50-50. But that 20 was loud and excited and got into it. And when the kick went in to win the game, they made some noise and you heard it. It wasn't like a murmur and, you know, sometimes you get like the sporadic cheers from the visiting team. It felt like a little bit of a roar there. Like, yeah, there were enough of them that they made some noise when that kick doinked in.
Yeah, you felt it on some Terry chants. You felt it on a couple of penalties that went Washington's way, that there were big roars. And I'd imagine that probably helps the guys on the sideline feel pretty juiced. It's like the right amount of support while still feeling like you're against everyone else in the stadium. As that game's unfolding, and, you know, especially late, Jaden gets that run on third down to extend it. Was there the feeling of inevitability in the stadium, considering all the things that had led to that point, that it just seems like he always finds a way, they always find a way, even without him last week against Dallas with Mariota? Is that what it felt like as you were watching it in the press box? Like, here we go again, but instead of here we go again in all the ways that have been terrible for 30 years, here we go again in a good way.
Five in a row. How can you not expect it now? They've done this every week for five consecutive weeks. It's absolutely incredible. I will say I had no worries about Jaden performing in that moment. There were a lot of questions to me around the clock. 4:50 to go. They couldn't run the ball. I thought it was going to be tricky to get the clock to zero. Austin Ekeler rattles off his first run, and it's like, okay, he can run the ball. We've got a viable running option. They've got a shot at doing this. Because I was worried they were going to score, but it was going to be a two-and-a-half-minute score. Because if you can't run the ball, it's really hard to run the clock. So when Ekeler rolled off his run, that was a really positive sign. And then obviously Jaden knows how to run. He got a key one as well that kept the clock moving. Todd Bowles didn't call the timeouts in front of the two-minute warning. Didn't end up mattering. But it was just another thing where it's like, oh, they might get this clock to zero. Like, this is a thing that's happening here. So I had no doubts Jaden was going to come through in that moment. My only question was whether he could get the clock where it needed to be. And credit to Cliff Kingsbury on that, too. That's very much a coordinator game as well. He's keeping an eye on that. I thought he did a fantastic job.
Certainly did, and not just in that time, the winning time moment, but all game long to control the clock. 35 plus minutes of time of possession in a game where you average 2.5 yards a carry. Those two stats are not supposed to go together, but they did. What did Jaden have to say after the game, and what impressed you about the way that he was able to manage this game from an efficiency standpoint without the support of a running game?
Yeah, if I didn't know Jaden better, I'd say he was putting on an act with his nonchalance, right? Like even the Mannings and Bradys and Mahomeses of the world, like watching Mahomes an AFC title game press conference. Like, he gets into it a little bit. He's a little bit like, hey, that was cool out there, guys. Like, that was all right. Jaden doesn't do that at all. And it's not an act. And he is, you know, just so cool, calm, collected. Dan Quinn said today, most excited he's ever seen Jaden was when Marcus Mariota threw the touchdown pass in Dallas to clinch the sixth seed, because he was so happy for Marcus in that moment. But when it's him on the line, he shuts it down and he goes into kind of ice cold Terminator mode. He knew what he had to do. He you know, the bloody face early, and certainly there was one hit that, my goodness, he got his world rocked. I think he knew, riding on the bus over at 4 o'clock in Tampa, I'm going to have to get beat up today to win this football game. And he was up for it, and he did it. And, you know, in the press conference after, did not throw his running backs under the bus one tiny bit, say, there are going to be days where I'm off and they're going to have to pick me up, which there aren't, apparently. It was a very nice thing of him to say. I don't know that we have those days anymore. Very complimentary of everybody, full team effort. Mentioned that, you know, they had some good runs and felt the offensive line got going a little bit, you know, just not even a hint of what it took from him personally to win that game.
Michael Phillips was there at the game. Of course, he's also the host of MP on the Mic, 10 a.m. to noon on 910 The Fan in Richmond. Longtime reporter covering the team. You can listen to his show daily on the free Odyssey app. What was the, like, outside of Jaden and the general game management by the offense, whether it's a playmaker on defense, whether it's another guy offensively, like, what as you're walking out of the stadium last night, is the other most impressive thing to you, or the thing that, like, you woke up this morning thinking about, non-Jaden Daniels category?
I think Bobby Wagner's fumble recovery was just so smooth. How many times does that ball get loose and the defender sees it and jumps on it and it bounces and there's a pile and a scrum and we're sorting it out for a while? That ball fell. I don't even know how he did it. I mean, that's like, you know, Ichiro style reaction to the fastball right there. He sees that ball on the ground and in one just silky smooth movement, picks it up, gets on it, establishes possession, moves on with his life, doesn't even have to deal with the scrum. That's a grown man player showing up to play in a big game. And you knew he would, obviously, with his history. I'm just crazy impressed with that fumble recovery, Craig.
I think that's a great call. Like, he was Johnny on the spot, because of course he was. He's Bobby Wagner, and that's the thing he does. And yet, Michael, did you know that was his first ever career fumble recovery in the playoffs?
I believe it, just because, you know, you got to be right place, right time. Somebody's got to drop it. But, you know, the margin for error was so low in this game. If he doesn't get that ball, it's zero turnovers either way. It's a very different game. You know, we're probably second guessing the Dan Quinn fourth down decisions, which I wouldn't be, just for the record. I was, you know, that's why I'm on Twitter, so you can get my real time opinions. In real time, I liked it. I still like it this morning. But he was there, right place, right time, opportunistic. And I think you have to consider that one of the turning point plays of the game. The other one defensively for me is when you hold Tampa to 3 instead of 7 to get the ball back tied. That was a huge momentum swing as well, to finally be able to pump the brakes on those guys.
For sure. And the guy at the center of that, Bobby Wagner, huge second down stop on Baker Mayfield in that final defensive drive. Michael Phillips with us, reminding us the only reason that you might want to be on Twitter is to read his tweets here on The Hoffman Show. You don't even have to go on Twitter to get his thoughts. He'll just say them into the telephone, and we play them out to you here on the Team 980. Okay, let's quietly, secretly, because we're professionals trying to be objective, talk about a few negatives from the game and things that I'll put it this way. Be a lot easier to beat Detroit if these couple of things can get cleaned up. First and
I
foremost.
I know number one is.
Which one do you think is number one? There's two main options.
Lattimore's number one. He was bad last night. He just was. I think he's probably still injured. Evans got the better of him, and that frustrated him, and obviously that stuff builds. The question is he still battling the hamstring, that it's a bad idea to play him against Detroit, or is this just, hey, he's not prime Lattimore. He's all right, but he can't go against your A.J. Browns of the world and your Mike Evanses of the world. And that's all right. You can work with that. But I worry it's the first one, not the second one. He's not fully right yet.
So if that's the case, like, what do they do and what was said about this last night in the game? Because ultimately, like, they did make some adjustments. The second half was better than the first. Evans didn't have any catches on that final drive, but he was targeted 7 times and had 7 catches. That's not good, especially when you're about to go face Amon-Ra St. Brown, who at this stage in their respective careers is very different, obviously, type of player, but better than Evans. And Jamison Williams, who is, I mean, I don't know who the hell covers him with that kind of speed. Like, you're going to have to play a ton of zone and tell Quan Martin and Jeremy Chinn, like, and Percy Butler, do not let that dude over the top, because if he runs past you, he is past you. There is no catching him. And so
I don't think there's
– what do you do with that?
I don't think there's anybody on the roster who can run that fast.
He's in fairness, there's like 4 guys in the NFL that can. So, like, most rosters don't have anybody that can run as fast as Jamison Williams.
Yeah, exactly. I thought – Sandra still was excellent again for the most part. You know, I have not gone back and rewatched yet. My hunch in the moment was that he showed up when he needed to, made some plays. I think it was a full team effort, as you mentioned. I think it took everybody to contain that group on the last bit. And I thought Dorrance Armstrong did his part, speeding everything up front. That was very helpful as well to you know, have them not be covering those guys for as long. I don't know that there's a single name answer to, okay, no Lattimore, here's what you do. I think it's that. It's a team effort, and it's finding a way to get the little edges where you can and get the pressures where you can in order to maybe cover up a little bit of that weakness. You mentioned 2 weaknesses. I'm assuming you mean the other one is Brian Robinson. You know, Tressway had 0 punting yards last night, so we can talk about his day too if we need to.
Tress, you lazy son of a gun. How dare you? Why did you even get to get on the plane? Why did you even get football pads, you punter? No.
It's a roster spot that could have gone to somebody who contributed, Craig.
I mean, they could have. Hey, we could have solved 2 problems in one. No Tressway, get Chris Rodriguez active. Boom. Michael has solved it.
Double boom. I love it. Brian Robinson. I'm not worried as much about that one just because of Austin Ekeler towards the end. Was hitting his groove, was running well. McNichols, Rodriguez, they've got options there. This is a smart staff. They've made the moves, and they've cut bait when they've needed to. I think B-Rob will be active on Sunday for sure. I just don't think he'll be as central to the game plan, or on Saturday, rather. I just don't think he'll be as central to the game plan as he was this week. No fault, no stones thrown here. Just it's the playoffs. You got to win, and it's next man up at this point. And I feel really good about Austin Ekeler.
I mean, I do think there's a question, though, of, like, Chris Rodriguez did have one hell of a December, and he has looked, I think, like the more effective rusher. So what do you do with that information? Like, do you have 4 guys active? Because I do think it's not worth sacrificing McNichols. People just want to put McNichols out. But that pony personnel where it's McNichols and Ekeler together, that stuff works a lot better with Jeremy McNichols in the game because of his versatility. Some of the stuff to have him in as a pass protector and then let Austin Ekeler get out in routes, it causes defenses some serious conundrums of, like, which personnel do we match this with? Do we treat Ekeler like a running back or a receiver? Like, there's a lot of stuff that happens, and McNichols is the guy that is kind of the pivot point of that package. But at the same time, like, you have to have a first and second down running back who's effective, and Brian Robinson doesn't feel like he's been effective for the better part of a month.
Here's the beauty, Craig, of being a sports talk host and not the coach of a football team. Yeah, I just have 4 active. It's so easy for me to say right now on the radio. Yeah, I'd have 4 active. I understand that 4 is a hard decision. Is that a Ben Sinnott decision? I don't know. Like, you know, we can run down the list and figure out who the name is that's next one up. It just feels like a really important part of the game. And, you know, Jaden's so good, and Jaden covers up for so much. But you owe it to Jaden as the coach to give him every advantage you can give him going into the game. And that advantage is to have Chris Rodriguez active and playing. Maybe it means you sit B-Rob. I don't know that I don't know that they're quite ready for that discussion. They might be, you know, when they run the numbers on Friday and figure out their inactives. But yeah, I think you got to find a way to do it. You got to find a way to give Jaden the tools he needs to be at his best.
There is a wide receiver named Chris Moore who played for them on Sunday. And it would seem that perhaps that could be done. But I mean, I guess he did play like 12 snaps. I got to figure out what roles he was in, and you know, is that easily substitutable package wise? What's the special teams impact? They've had Tremaine up at times. I mean, Crowder didn't play a ton of offensive snaps. They really saved him. That's actually another interesting thing that they're doing right now. Like Austin Eckler was just named the All-Pro kick returner, second team. He's not even returning kicks right now. Like after the concussion, they're like, nope, we're not messing with that. He's too valuable to the offense. They're leaving Luke McCaffrey back there, and Luke's doing a nice job. And then Jamison Crowder, who's obviously had some really big days for them offensively and some really key, important, and memorable catches, think Philly game. Like he didn't really play a lot offensively. He's out there to be a punt returner, and they're limiting his reps because he's battling through an injury. And I think the management of the personnel, you know, you don't anticipate your starting running back averaging 1.6 a carry. That's just a bad day at the office. But the managing of the personnel and how they're using these guys, I think, is really interesting and something that's worth watching this week as they try to figure out what to do with that run game.
Yeah, and I think for the last few weeks, I was kind of excusing it by saying, look, it's a group project. You know, the O-line hasn't been as good as they need to be either in run blocking. I don't think that was the case last night. I think they were good enough to do better than 1.6 yards per carry. I think that, you know, B-Rob's wearing this one. Doesn't make him less of a guy. People are always going to love him. He's always, you know, what he overcame. And certainly, you know, he was a tough, hard-nosed guy when we were all begging for tough, hard-nosed guys on the football team. He's just not having success right now. And right now, you're playing a playoff game in Detroit against the number one seed. It's not a time for sentimentality.
No, I agree with that as well. And I also do wonder what it means for him long term here as he's getting near the end of his rookie deal. But we can deal with that after the season because there's more season to go. So the last thing for Michael Phillips here, of course, the host of MP on the Mic, 10 a.m. to noon on 910 The Fan down in Richmond. He was in Tampa last night. Michael, first of all, will you be in Detroit this weekend?
I will not be in Detroit this weekend.
Okay.
When we were in Tampa, I was remembering a game maybe 5-6 years ago where after the game, you're mentioning the crowd, and I just remember after the game, DJ Swanger and Josh Norman went off on a little rant about how they get better support in Tampa than they do in Landover.
I remember that. I was there for that. Yeah.
And my, how times have changed. They still have good support in Tampa, but now they actually have good support in Landover, too.
That is true.
I just saw the ticket prices. They're not going to have good support in Detroit, and it's nothing. it's got nothing to do with anything other than the fact that that city has been thirsty for a winner, probably as thirsty as we've been, if not thirstier, and they've got one, and they are backing their boys.
They are not going to open up a whole lot of tickets to whatever the league minimum is. That is what they are going to get out of the Detroit Lions, and they might even say, like, hey, Lions fans, if you want extra tickets, over here. What's your first blush look at this matchup for Washington, and what kind of chance do you give them to spring the upset?
It's not zero. It's not a good number, though. This is a really good Detroit team. They're well coached. They're aggressive. They've got playmakers. They are really fundamentally sound on both sides of the ball. They play tough, hard-nosed football. They've got the crowd advantage. They've got the bye week advantage. They're red hot right now. Everything's going for them. I really like lining up with number five, though. He's the difference maker here, right? If Mariota started, I would give them a 1-2% chance of winning. With Jaden starting, can I get to 15-20% by Saturday night? I do plan on talking myself into it.
Yeah, I mean, if I think by the end of the week, I will talk to myself that if these teams played five times, Washington would win at least one. And that's 20%. So math checks out for me. Michael Phillips, you can catch him 10 a.m. to noon on the free Odyssey app, or if you're driving through 910 The Fan in Richmond, also on 105.1 FM. Michael, appreciate the time as always, sir. I'll talk to you later in the week, and we'll talk to you again next Monday, which will be a Tell the Truth Monday. And 1 in 5 times, statistically proven, would be a victory Monday. And Michael, all we need is one.
You don't have to beat them all five times, Craig. You just have to beat them this time.
Just have to beat them this time. Michael, thank you, sir.
Take care.
That's Michael Phillips with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, our pick six at 5:30, because the show ends at 6 o'clock today. So the six players that we identified as keys to the game on Friday, how'd they do? A couple of them, they were enormous factors in Washington's win. We'll break it down next. It's Hoffman's show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app on a victory Monday for the Washington Commanders. Typically, we go around the NFL this time. We'll do that tomorrow, review the non-Commanders games of Wild Card Weekend because, well, there's one more game left tonight, and we're missing a third of our show. We have Maryland Hoops tonight. Pre-game starts at 6, so we are going to hit right now what we usually do at 6 o'clock. The name's not quite as neat, but the concept works just as well. It's our pick 6 at, well, it's at 5:30.
The 6 biggest Commander storylines.
It is torn!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the Pick 6 at 6.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
All right, let's party. On Fridays, we pick 6 players who we think will have an outsized impact on the game for the Commanders. And the only rule is you can't pick quarterbacks. And you can pick the opposing players if you think stopping that player is going to be a huge factor in a Commanders win. And, well, we picked some really interesting ones on Friday. We start with...
Number one.
Anthony, you picked Tyler Biadasz. Tyler Biadasz.
Yes, I picked Tyler Biadasz in part two... The Bucs' ultra-aggressive, blitz-heavy, you know, defensive unit. And I think you did a good job of outlining how we were able to, like, slow them earlier today. You know, these long, extended drives. You don't have the same energy that you would have, you know, if you're on and off the field after, like, three and outs and things of that nature. But we had, you know, what was it, a 17-play drive? That was 17 that took up like 9 minutes. Then we also had like two other drives that also were at least 10 plays at the minimum.
Bro, they had 5 10-play drives.
Okay, yeah.
5 10-play drives.
So when you can do that, you can dominate the time of possession. You can, you know, keep those guys off balance. It's going to be tough to, you know, play in and play out blitz as heavy and effective as they were early in the game. And I think we did a good job, you know, limited them. We only gave up 1 sack. And, you know, Jaden, he wasn't pressured a lot. So I think that's also in part to, you know, Jaden and Tyler Biadasz and the rest of the offensive line.
I think Biadasz's organization was better than, like, it was better than, like, his actual play, right? He didn't grade out super well on PFF, and I haven't watched the film back yet to have an idea of what happened. But in a little bit that I have watched, and in watching the game last night, they had a ton of replays, everything. Like, there weren't a ton of free runners coming at Jaden. And the times that there was quick pressures, like, guys got beat quickly. The last couple weeks, there has been a ton of unblocked pressure with Michael Dieter at center. There's just a miscommunication of where guys are supposed to go. And it seemed like they were way more on their P's and Q's. And I think Biadasz has a huge role to play in that. That doesn't mean that they played great up front. Obviously, the run game was absolute booty all day long. But they did a good enough job in the passing game to protect Jaden, or at least at times where there was pressure and they didn't have a great or didn't do a great job of picking it up and he had to flush. Like, they were able to wash it all to one side and give him a clean exit, often to his right, which is the way that he wants to go to be able to keep his eyes downfield and throw with his right hand rolling right. So they only gave up 15 pressures on 40 dropbacks, which, considering the amount that Tampa Bay blitzes, is pretty significant. And actually, let me look real quick. Pass rush coverage. No, where is that? It's in a different part of PFF. But I believe they blitzed on 55% of their snaps, and to give up only like 37% pressure rate on that heavy of a blitz is really good. And the thing is, like, a lot of those pressures I don't think were very impactful. So on the reasons that you picked Tyler Biadasz, I think Tyler Biadasz did a pretty damn good job.
Number two.
I picked Terry McLaurin second, and I feel really good about that. Anthony, I was like, look, Terry's always going to be a factor, but they don't have a chance if he's not a big factor. And they come out first drive of the game, first third down of the game. Okay, Tampa, you want to blitz? You want to leave Terry McLaurin one-on-one with Jamel Dean or anybody else? Watch what my guy can do. The red zone stuff. He is such a weapon down there. And I was actually talking about this with Keim earlier today. I don't know when this is coming out, but I taped with John for his show earlier today. And I was like, John dropped this amazing stat. First of all, that's Terry's 11th red zone touchdown this season. 11 this season. Okay, this is a guy that did not have that many in the previous 4 years of his career, 5 years of his career. That is more than his entire career into this year combined. And if you think about it, it makes all the sense in the world. What do you lose in the red zone? You lose space. Well, who's the best contested catch guy where there isn't a lot of space in the entire NFL? Terry McLaurin. So this makes sense. They weaponize him down there. The patience he shows on that in-cut route to run the back line, excellent. Jaden just waiting on it. Bang, hits him. They tried the fade, which didn't go down, but like almost did, which is an incredible almost catch. I mean, his ability to track the ball is really special. I know the Post did a really big graphics and words piece on that over the weekend that I'm really excited to go back and read now because I didn't get a chance to over the weekend. So, like, Terry was awesome. The energy he brings, and I think they did a great job of keeping him involved. They had a bubble screen at one point. They didn't go anywhere, but it's like, nope, we haven't forgotten about him. This dude's going to be involved. You better plan for him. And I think that also opens up other stuff because there are times that he's getting doubled, and that means that Ertz is open, or Diami's got a one-on-one, or OZ's got a one-on-one, that they're a little lighter in run support, and you get, you know, the one good carry they had all game. So there's just so many things that having a dangerous number one wide receiver does for you. And he's going to have another banger of a game against Detroit, who's going to try to play man coverage and do all the stuff that Detroit does. And it's going to be up to Terry and Jaden to take advantage like they did in this one. They sure did. And hoorah, Terry McLaurin, first career playoff win.
Yeah, and one thing I will want to add, the fact that they were going to him in the red zone, even on the fade comeback that he tried to run on Jamel Dean.
Yep.
I feel like the only reason that didn't work was just because Jamel's a taller defender. But 9 times out of 10, like, most of the corners that Terry's going to go up against are going to be his size or, like, you know, a little smaller. And he's going to have that favorable one-on-one. But still have that faith to go to him in that spot, I don't know, just speaks to, you know, Jaden and Terry, like, being on the same page. And that's what you want out of your QB1 and your wide receiver one.
Terry, an 88.9 PFF grade. Is that good?
Yeah.
That's real good.
Number three,
Anthony Haney. You picked Jalen McMillan as having to step up opposite of Mike Evans. Mixed day for the rookie. And that was a big part of the Commanders getting their victory.
Yeah, I think he had sort of a quieter day just because Mike Evans got off. You know, Baker only threw the ball 18 times. He's 15 for 18. And 7 of those went to Mike Evans. So everybody else had a quieter day. Jalen, he did end up having a drop, but he also had an explosive too that we end up giving up. So
it's like a fake screen, I think, that he leaked up the middle on. That was a really good design. Cohen's good, man.
Now he is. But I think for the most part, like, we did a good job of, like, keeping him in check. And then when we double, you know, Mike Evans, putting Marshawn up against him in the red zone, I think we did a good job of just taking him away. And that's what you want to be able to do if you're going to be giving that much attention to Mike Evans after the first half he had.
For sure. McMillan on the day matched up most often with Mike Sainra still. He had the one catch for 15 yards. He, you know, they put Bobby Wagner as having the catch that was over the middle. Mm. But he's got one target against Juice that Juice broke up, and he had one target against Lattimore, which went nowhere as well. And I think that you had, and that's the one that's considered a drop. But I think that's the kind of thing that you have to do is, like, you might have to, with the current state of Marshawn Lattimore, go with the old Patriots. We're going to put our best corner on the number two receiver, mm-hmm. make sure that he's dead, and then just double the number one. So I'm very curious to see if they can implement that on Amon-Ra St. Brown this week, or do they trust Lattimore to go? I don't know. We'll find out. I think it's going to depend on how he's moving around in practice this week. All right, 3 more players to talk about next as we wrap up the show. And then we're done because we just go to 6 o'clock today. We'll see if we can sneak in a real things as well. Some of the sound from the post game last night, including Magic Johnson holding court outside the Commanders locker room. That's all next as we wrap up the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are wrapping up because we got Maryland Hoops. Let's go Turtles coming up at 6 o'clock. Tip off 6:30 for the Terps tonight. But Johnny and the crew get going. coming up at 6 here on your home for all things Maryland sports, the Team 980. I got to say, Anthony, we did miss one significant thing on Jalen McMillan and our pick 6 at 6. He was, it's not really his fault, but like the fumble from Baker Mayfield, he is on the end around there. And that's on Baker, based off of Baker's body language and the fact that he was like, hey, that was me. But, you know, it does feel like it's probably worth mentioning. So shout out to Spaffron in the YouTube chat for mentioning that.
Was that supposed to go to McMillan? Or he would just...
I don't know. I didn't see any of the post-game stuff on the Tampa side of it to know whether that was a end around like that was mistimed and late, or whether it was supposed to be a fake and Baker just like hit it off his hip. I don't know what the situation was, whether it was supposed to be an end around or whether it was supposed to be like a fake and then a bootleg situation. Collinsworth was musing about that on the broadcast, and you'd have to ask them, and I did not see that. So if people want to drop that in the chat, they can, but we're going to keep things moving. Number four. That's what I said. Number four. Bucky Irving, Anthony, who was exactly who Bucky Irving is. He is a big-time explosive runner when he has clean looks, but is limited in that he's only going to get, like, he's not going to create a bunch of big runs out of nothing. If you give him a crease, he's going to kill you. And he did a really good job in this game, especially in the second half, of killing the Commanders a couple of times. But it wasn't the carry over carry consistency that you know you're afraid of with, I think, like a David Montgomery this week for Detroit. But he's also, you know, had a couple of other effective plays. I think Bucky Irving had a good game, but not so good that it obviously killed the Commanders and they couldn't overcome it. I guess that's the way I would describe it.
Yeah. I think on the ground, definitely, I ain't gonna lie, the first play, Bobby Wagner stuffs him. I thought that we were gonna be able, you know, set the tone from there, but later on in the game, they started, you know, just getting momentum going. But in the fourth quarter, I think we did a solid job, especially just to get the stop. Granted, it was a botched snap, but that's out of our control, Craig. We got him down, and we were able to, you know, get the ball back and eventually score. And I have one question, though. On the pick play, if that's the Commanders, are they calling interference?
That's a great question, dude.
I promise you, if that was us, Craig, we would have not gotten that call.
That definitely, like, Collinsworth described it as a pick. And was it McMillan?
It was McMillan.
He
pointed him out.
Right. That and the Ertz no call. The Ertz one is way more egregious. Yeah. But that was a pick like 4 yards down the field. There wasn't contact. I mean, McMillan does a good job of selling that he's running a route, but like also you pointed out the dude, then you ran straight into him.
I think it very
easily could have been offensive pass interference.
Because he scored. Was that Bucky?
That was Bucky Irving. Yeah. That's a good pull by you. On that, I forgot that was. That was Irving, one of his two catches on the day. Mm-hmm. But I do think on that front, you know, Washington, or we talked about how Tampa's got the best screen game in the NFL. Screen game really wasn't that big of a part of yesterday's day for them.
Nope.
So I do think that is probably worth mentioning. By the way, in terms of success rate and EPA per play, all those kinds of fun things, they held Bucky Irving to just a 47% success rate on his runs yesterday. So that was fifth best of all the running backs all weekend long. But his EPA per attempt, so kind of the damage that he does, was 10th best of all the qualified rushers. So, like, you have Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Jaden in there as well. But towards the bottom half of the running backs for the weekend. So, all in all, a very, very good job by the Commanders. And let's see, can I even sort this? No, I can't sort it by quarter. I was hoping I could. So, we'll roll with that. Those are the statistics on Bucky Irving. 7 carries, almost 80 yards, 2 catches. One of them was a touchdown that should have been called back. And the Commanders did a good enough job on him that they didn't lose. But also, I think the fact that he only had 17 carries, I think they would have liked more for Bucky Irving, but they couldn't because they couldn't get off the field. Which brings us back to
number five.
Number five in our pick six, John Allen, Anthony, who I believe was your pick.
Yes, he was my pick, Craig. And you might not believe this, but he did not record a stat yesterday.
He didn't record a stat? I thought he had one somewhere.
Nah, so he was in on the TFL on the botched snap. He didn't complete the tackle, though. But he did hit him first, and then everybody else rallied to the ball. But even like, I looked at some of the all 22.
He's got one pressure, according to PFF.
Look, that counts then.
Yeah. He had a missed tackle.
But when you look at the all 22, I think him and Deron and Johnny as well, I think they did a solid job of, you know, just holding their guy at the point and allowing the linebackers or, you know, the safeties to, you know, come down and fill those lanes and get the tackles. And I think last year when we had Montez Sweat, Chase Young, and all those guys, a lot of those guys were playing for themselves. And I think yesterday was sort of them, you know, buying into like what everybody's preaching and allowing, you know, Bobby to fill the lanes or Louvu to come down. And we saw those guys at the lines making the play. So even though, you know, he doesn't show up in the stat sheet, it's still just something to, you know, note and watch that he did have some type of impact.
No, I think that's a good point. And I'll have a lot more on this on Allen and everybody tomorrow when I've had the chance to watch the All-22. But I think that's a great point. Like, there wasn't these huge gaps, you know, and to the point that there were, they were, you know, contained enough that guys like Chin were able to come down and make plays. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Allen definitely not a huge impact yesterday. Newton and Payne had bigger impacts in terms of TFLs and everything. His PFF grade's like 40-something. It's not good.
Yeah.
But I don't think that John Allen was like heinous yesterday anyway. Of course, the Commanders' D-line has a huge task this week against Detroit. That offensive line is grotesque.
Number six.
Last but not least in our pick six, went with Quan Martin, who I think was pretty good yesterday. Graded out very, very well. Graded out as a 70.4 overall, fourth best grade on the Commanders behind Wagner, Chin, and Louvu. And I think the biggest thing is he has an 82.9 tackling grade. He made some big plays in the open field where he one-on-one solo tackles guys like Mike Evans because his corners made mistakes and or just got beat. Like, it happens. There's a slant that Marshawn gets beat by Mike Evans, and Quan grabs Mike Evans and picks him up off the ground and slams him down. There's no big vertical plays over the top yesterday. Like, when was the last time that you remember a big vertical play over the top where Quan Martin was nearby? Like, Philly had a couple, I guess, with AJ.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was one against Dallas.
Nah.
I don't think there was any against Atlanta that I can remember. And big vertical shots down the field.
Nah.
So, tells you that Quan Martin's adjusted into this safety thing. Remember, it's his first year as a full-time safety. He was playing nickel last year. He played corner in college, played nickel in college. Little bit of safety, but he's adjusting quite well to this and under Dan Quinn, under Joe Witt, in coordination with Jeremy Chin back there, Percy Butler rotating in. I think Quan's probably been the most consistent member of that secondary this year from start to finish, and I think he had another really good one yesterday. They're definitely going to need him to stay over the top and be hanging out over the top of Jameson Williams this week. And, you know, the other thing, too, is Quan was so close to making a play on that Mike Evans slant for the touchdown. Like, he plays that really well, gets his hands up, whatever. It's just a tick late. Quan, I need you to wear the Guardian helmet this week. I need you to grow your helmet size. That way, next time it doinks off your dome. Because had it literally been that extra quarter of an inch of padding, that might have been enough to be in the way. And just a heck of a throw by Baker. Incredible concentration by Mike Evans. I don't think there's no way he saw that ball into his hands.
Yeah.
He just had to put his hands where he saw it going. Quan's helmet gets in the way. His hands don't move. The ball's fast enough that it hits him in the hands, and you kind of catch it blind.
Yeah, we talk about perfect throws, man. That was a perfect throw and throwing to a spot. Good gracious.
For sure. All right, that's pretty much the show. Anthony, do we have some of the post-game sound in the magical folder here? It looks like we do.
Yeah, I got Magic and Josh.
So let's get to it, eh? Let's get to that was our pick six, Real Things Real People Said, in two real microphones to close out the show.
Real things.
We're not going to be sucked this year.
Real people.
5-11. Not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
Culture's good now, everybody. Brucey, you're long, long gone. And thanks to guys like Magic Johnson and Josh Harris.
This man right here. No, this is serious. You said, what does it take? New vision, new owner with a strategy, picking the right people. First, our coach, Coach Quinn, Adam Peters, and then we all step out the way and let them do their job.
Talent, culture, and people.
There it is.
Talent, culture, and people.
So that's it. Don't make this about us. It's about those guys.
Yeah. Well, Matt, did you envision it happening this fast, 2 years?
Quarterback.
How could you?
You have to get a quarterback.
We'll see you guys in Detroit. It's going to be cool.
Make it about those guys.
Sorry, Magic, we played your soundbite, but your guys did a hell of a job. Congrats to the Commanders. On to Detroit we go. They're not done yet. We're done, though. See you back here tomorrow. Maryland Hoops next.